From KIOS in Omaha, you're listening to Riverside Chats. I'm Maria Corpus. Today I'm talking to Ange Bennett and Brittany Wright of Inclusive Communities. We're talking about Bridging Cultural Divides in the Conversations for Change series, which will bring performer Bob the Drag Queen to Omaha on March 26th.
You're in the room because you're going to plant the seed. Whether they choose to water it, all we can do is say, here are these tools.
We can't change anybody's mind for them. That's a decision and time that an individual has to make the decision to do.
Yeah, we're not changing minds. Changing hearts.
Changing hearts.
Stay tuned for our conversation after this break.
Next time on The Entertainment, we're looking at the ethics of storytelling and the tricky definitions of genres like camp and melodrama.
People were essentially saying that if you think this movie's funny, if you think this movie's a comedy, it's immoral to do so. And to me, that's where the lack of media literacy lies. It's not that, oh, I think that you're media illiterate if you didn't laugh at the movie. I think it's media illiterate to tell people how to watch a movie.
Listen on Omaha Public Radio or PRX.
Welcome to Riverside Chats. I'm Maria Corpus. My guests today are Ange Bennett and Brittany Wright, the Communications Manager and Director of Operations at Inclusive Communities. Inclusive Communities is a nonprofit that uses human relations work to promote diversity and inclusion among individuals, workplaces, and communities. The organization also holds public events to encourage cross-cultural dialogue, including the Jane H. and Rabbi Sidney H. Brooks Conversations for Change series. The series brings in prominent entertainment industry figures for conversation to build connections across identities. Conversations for Change launched last year with actor Cal Penn as a featured guest. This year's event features performer Bob the Drag Queen, who won the 8th season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Today, Bennett and Wright are here to talk about their decision to invite Bob the Drag Queen to Omaha in the wake of Nebraska's ban on gender-affirming care for minors and attempt to ban minors from attending drag shows. Conversations for Change is Tuesday, March 26th at the Holland Center. Admission will be free. Here's my conversation with Ange Bennett and Brittany Wright from Inclusive Communities. I'm really excited to have you guys here with me today because I feel like the Inclusive Community organization just does so much kind of behind the scenes work for our city, and I want to kind of expose what that work is so our community can get a better idea of what you guys do. So fill me in on what is the mission of Inclusive Communities and the vision kind of going forward.
Yes. So our mission is to confront bigotry, prejudice, and discrimination. Our thought process through that is leadership development, community building, and institutional transformation. Changing those bigger structures, because white supremacy is a system that's been upheld. So we're going to have to go into the infrastructure to change that.
When people hear infrastructure, it kind of seems like a big thing. And so it's like, can you take me down to like, what does that look like in your work through action to do that those things? Because I feel like I hear that word a lot and I'm always like, that's such a big, like, infrastructure of what? What kind of are you diving into through that work? Even if it's just like a glimpse of it or like how that actually plays out. Can you give me an example?
Yeah. So, for example, kind of going into our action services and going into and partnering with businesses, going in and changing the culture. So, for example, we try to model that internally. So instead of having an employee handbook, we have a culture map because we want to give employees tools to succeed. We don't want to give them a handbook that's punitive, saying, hey, this is how you're going to fail. We want employees to come in and say, hey, here are all the tools that Inclusive Communities is going to provide to you to help you succeed.
And you go into organizations and help them kind of shift their employee handbook into a culture map. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I like that. It feels more positive, putting a more positive spin on it, too, because it's like
I'm never going to go look in a handbook, but if it's called a culture map, it's like, okay, all of a sudden I want to know what direction I'm going.
Yes.
Okay, so tell me what your guys' role, your day-to-day roles are that help contribute to that mission, because I know you both have two different roles here.
Yes. So director of operations. So I'm really the internal person. My goal is to bring structure to the organization, to really make sure that the work we're doing is sustainable, really to mirror everything that our programming team is going out in the community, into businesses, into schools, in teaching, making sure that that is what we're doing internally. So really my goal is to model all the things that we're going out into the community and teaching.
Really practicing what you're preaching.
Yes.
That's so important.
Yes. And then, of course, the fun stuff, the day-to-day, paying the bills, making sure that nothing burns down.
My role is not that. I'm the face of the organization, I guess, is a good way to put it. All of our public-facing things I get to be in charge of. So all of our social media, how we message and brand ourselves to the public, and ensuring, again, what Brittany said is making sure that all of our messaging is aligned with what our team is going out every day and doing with the community.
ICE has been around since 1938. And how has the vision kind of shifted from almost 100 years ago until now? Like, what were the things that you were all trying to address back then? And how has that shifted into what you're addressing today?
Good question. Because we started as the Midlands chapter of the National Conference of Christians and Jews, and it was heavily focused on interfaith dialogues, interfaith work, just protecting the Jewish community and making sure that, you know, there's no hate. And over time, I think it's just expanded. So we took this one small group. We saw that there was a need for safety, security, making sure that people had open minds, open hearts to those different from them. And so over time, we have just increased our work to be more diverse, more inclusive, more equitable. And with that also was a name shift in 2010 to be Inclusive Communities. We're doing the same work to be inclusive and be equitable. It has expanded.
We evolved with the times, because as society was more culturally aware around identities, inclusive communities shifted with that.
Yeah.
It was interesting to read that you're a nonprofit human resources organization. So explain to us how you're helping HR teams.
We're the toolkit. Yeah. I think that's the best way to put the work that we do. Just like you said earlier, it feels like we are behind the scenes a lot. You know, people have heard of us. They know our name. But there's always that question, well, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And we're the toolkit for organizations. You know, we want to make sure that when we say human resources, we're giving people the things that they need to, and organizations the things that they need to be better people.
I like that it goes beyond just the workplace, but it's the whole person. Yeah. Helping empathize and everything.
I think it's easy to start in the workplace, because when you get those tools, then you can take those out into the real world and you can take those into your everyday life. Because what usually the workplace is a place that is more binary as far as like needing to be inclusive, right? Like, we don't always think that we need to be inclusive in our personal life. But when we go into a workplace, there's a whole, you know, handbook that says you can't do this, you can't do this, you need to treat people like this or this will happen. So when we bring that into the workplace and give them the tools there, they can take those into everyday life.
How do you develop what a culture map looks like for organizations? Like, where do you even start?
I think we start with what they have. We start with the goals of the organization. We start with kind of where there are gaps, where they know that they need help.
And Brittany, how do they know where they need help?
That's a great question. Sometimes people don't know where they need help.
Yeah, and that...
And how do you pitch that they need help?
Exactly, right?
Yeah, I think that really starts with our programming team. So Dominic, our director of programs and faculty, he has a whole intro process, asking kind of a list of questions, really getting to know the organization, making sure that whoever's coming to them has the support from leadership or the support from employees, because everybody has a level of power. So maybe they're getting pushback from leadership, but if they have that kind of social capital to be able to go in and kind of create the change from the bottom up, cool. We just need to know what we're coming into and what we're working with.
Like who's taking the initiative on bringing you all in.
Yeah.
You never want to give people information that they're not asking for necessarily, right? It's like, oh, we think we're the experts, so we're kind of come in here and just give you everything. And it's like, well, okay, well, no, where's your baseline? And then we can work from there.
Meaning where they're at.
Are there other organizations across the nation that are kind of doing the work you do to collaborate with? Or I love this idea that of this culture shift that you guys are helping organizations with. And I just am like, where is this information coming from? Like, who's helping set what the goal is for these organizations to be a flourishing environment for their employees?
So we are a part of the National Federation of Just Communities. So there are organizations across the nation, and it's a coalition, if you will, of organizations that are doing this work. And putting all those organizations together, we learn from each other, we grow with each other. Things that we're doing really well, we could probably send to another organization, or things that they're doing really well, we could learn from them just to strengthen across the nation.
And support systems, I find that doing this work, it can be hard. It can take a lot out of you. For example, there is a chapter in Buffalo. And so when they had that tragedy, they had the coalition to kind of lean on, maybe not for resources, but just for that support.
Mm-hmm. Can you share it with our listeners what tragedy you're referring to?
Yes, there was a mass shooting in Buffalo, New York, where a white supremacist went into, was looking for black neighborhoods to target specifically, found a grocery store and went in and killed a sizable number of black individuals.
So how were you able to kind of work with that community to help them during that time?
I wasn't on staff at that time, but from my understanding, there became sharing calls based on kind of identities. So then you can kind of go into a community that looks like you, feels like you, understands the things that you go through. And I believe they're just monthly calls, and it's just a space to just talk, a space to get ideas, a space to vent.
Is that almost in the same form as your table talks?
No, I'd say it's a little bit different. Our table talks are monthly conversations where we have a moderated panel. From my understanding, that the origin of that was there was a group of individuals that would go into homes every month and have a different conversation over food. And so we've kind of flipped that and turned that into a larger scale. We hold that at the CEC on the UNO campus monthly. And so we have a panel, a moderator, and we have food and we have conversation.
Yeah, I highly recommend that any listeners check those out. I was privileged enough to be a moderator. I was on the panel for an AAPI conversation. It was during COVID, so I didn't get to eat any food, which was upsetting. Now that I hear about what it's like in person.
Yes. I hope you ate at home during the panel.
No, I was talking. It was something really special for me as a Filipino Asian in Omaha to hear from a wide range of ages of other Asian and Pacific Islanders on what they were going through, how they were feeling, and just to be even if it was just in virtual space with those people. And so that was kind of one of my first interactions with inclusive communities that I just thought was so special to be able to bring together people like that in Omaha going through similar things. Okay, so talk to me about the communities. When you say inclusive communities, like what communities are your ideal targets here in Nebraska?
Our target is always going to be the most marginalized, because if you get people to recognize the most marginalized in our community, everything else, right, will come.
you have these services to organizations and businesses, mm-hmm. but then you also are trying to bring up the marginalized. And so I'm curious how you work with both groups.
I think one of our overarching goals is to be able to create a space and an avenue for these marginalized communities to tell their stories and to end the stigmas that are attached to each of these different communities. And so I think we're serving all of them at the same time, but just in different ways. It's a good question.
Yeah, because our table talks, right? We do table talks interfaith, we do intergenerational, we do systems impacted table talks, we do race and identity, we do sexuality. And when we have all those panels, every panel is, who do we want on this panel that is going to be the expert of this thing? And when we are, I think our table talk focus is around those marginalized identities. We, you know, try not to, and I guess even some of our table talks we may have brought in where it's like a all white male mm-hmm. table talk, right? Because there might be an identity or something, maybe, who knows, that we're missing there. But yeah, I think our table talks probably, when I think about that question that you're asking and how we're servicing everyone, I think we do it best in those, because we encourage people who don't have an understanding or may want more knowledge to come into the room. And we're servicing that community by bringing them the tools, bringing them the knowledge, and we're giving a platform to those identities that are underrepresented and do go unnoticed.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Communications Manager Ange Bennett and Director of Operations Brittany Wright of Inclusive Communities about the Nebraska Legislature's targeting of queer and trans folks and the upcoming Conversations for Change event with Bob the Drag Queen on March 26th. Follow Riverside Chats on Facebook or Instagram, or call in with a brief voicemail to 402-881-0089 for a chance to be featured on an upcoming show.
During these conversations and these platforms that you're giving, how do you see these impacting your community? Why is conversation so essential to the work that you do?
I think it's about planting that seed. So one of our faculty has a story about the traveling farmer, where they're planting the seeds and they may never see the fruit of their labor, but the seed has been planted. So creating that platform for the seeds to be planted. And some seeds are going to bloom quicker than others. So sometimes there are going to be hard conversations happening in the room right away. Otherwise, or other times, it's going to plant a seed in someone's mind, and then down the road, they're going to see the fruit of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the traveling farmer.
I know. Like, it's good.
Anytime she uses that, I'm like, yes.
I like that story too, because it kind of gives you a little bit of grace of like, yes. There's not so much pressure, even if we're not seeing the results we want to right now. We know that you know that you're doing the good work that'll eventually prosper.
I also think it gives people an opportunity to not feel like they have to make the change right away.
Yeah.
Like, they take in the information, they can process the information, they go out and figure out how to utilize the information.
How do you encourage action post conversations and post reflection?
I think depending on the topic, there are certain topics that we do have action items that we can share out immediately. Mm. Other times there's maybe reading materials that we can kind of give out for people to kind of be able to digest and think and share. Because really we want a lot of these topics to spark conversations outside of that room. Mm.
So with all of these different avenues of offering to all the different communities that you serve, what is the framework that you base all of your work in?
We're moving away from the DEI perspective because we want to be more inclusive again, with the legislation and businesses and organizations starting to shift their way of thinking when they hear DEI. And so our framework is leaning toward what we call culture change framework. And that's something that we've been practicing in-house for the last maybe 2 years or so.
Yeah, what does that mean? This is a whole new phrase for me.
It is. So we have a director of culture and sustainability.
And her job is that of the in-house. When we say culture shift, it's are we ensuring that not only are we being inclusive, but people feel like they belong?
Because we have these strategic directives we kind of talked about before. It's that institutional change, the community building, and leadership development. And so those are tied to every action that we have. And then we have strategic actions, I believe, is the other section where through our actions, we're trying to activate courageous people.
What does being a courageous person look like?
Being a courageous person can look different in different areas, but it's a person that is going to show up, is going to sit in the room and be uncomfortable, is going to have the uncomfortable conversation, you don't have to speak up and call out a whole room of 100 people. You might just need to call out that one person, whether it be your mom, your best friend, your dad. So really, a courageous person is willing to show up and do the work. Because we have three really aspirational goals as an organization. So inclusive communities will be the most, aid Nebraska in being the most inclusive community in the United States.
Audacious.
Very audacious. I mean, even looking back at our mission is to confront bigotry, prejudice, and discrimination. That's really no easy feat. So if our mission is very aspirational, we're going to have these larger goals.
What do you think a courageous person is, Ange?
I would probably say something similar. I think being courageous means that you're I wouldn't even say unafraid, because you can be afraid. Mm. Like, you can absolutely be afraid to put yourself in the space to do that work. But it's going beyond the fear, shifting your mindset to say, no, I am the person that I know what's wrong, and I know that we shouldn't be saying this or doing this, and calling those people in when you see that or you hear that.
Yeah, I recently called someone in my life courageous just for the fact that they admitted they were wrong and they shifted their perspective after hearing somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think that that is so courageous, because so often we just think we're right day after day. We get into these cycles of what our beliefs are, and then to be able to stop, receive information that's different from how we've been acting, address it, and change the way we think, I feel like is a courageous act, because so many people don't do that, don't reflect on their daily actions.
Reflection is key, right?
Yes, the reflection part. So how do you work with people who may be unresponsive to this mission, that maybe their employer brought you in? And how do you work with people who aren't responsive to this message?
It goes back to that planting the seed, right? We have lofty goals. The reality is there will be one or two people that you're going to have to, it's going to be like pulling teeth, right? It's like, okay, you're not getting this. All right, when are you ever going to get it? And especially as our facilitator, you could easily say, I'm in a room with people who are just not going to get it. Why am I here? But it's going back to that traveling farmer. You're in the room because you're going to plant the seed, whether they choose to water it, whether they choose to grow it. All we can do is say, here are these tools. We hope you use them. We would love for you to use them. There are going to be people who do use them, and there are going to be people who take those tools, put them on a shelf, let them collect dust for who knows how long. And then one day it could be something that I would say minor, but it's probably not. I'm a straight white man. I've got a daughter, and she goes off and she marries a black man, right? Now I've got to dust off those tools. I have them. Now that seed has been planted. Now with me, I love my daughter. I love my family. I want to make sure that I am being as respectful and as loving as I possibly can to the people that my daughter is bringing into my family. Mm. So now I got to dust off those tools.
The tools will be there when you're ready.
Yes.
I also think it's also important to note that our team goes into the room with the intention of meeting people where they're at. So we're not coming into the room expecting to change everybody's mind, because that's just not realistic. Mm-hmm. People, we can't change anybody's mind for them. That's a decision and time that an individual has to make the decision to do.
Yeah, we're not changing minds. Changing hearts.
Changing hearts.
We kind of touched on this earlier when you were talking about how you have someone internally who makes sure that your culture is on track. But with all of these different things that you do, how do you ensure that all of your programs are aligned in your vision and still tailor them to whoever you're speaking to and whoever you're working with?
I think that goes back to the intentionality. When we're creating these programs, we're doing it with being intentional and going back to kind of an operations lens, making sure that the things that we're doing internally are mirroring everything that we're doing externally. So with that intention, making sure that we're coming back to our materials every 6 months. Mm. When I am creating standard operating procedures, I have to create them in a way that it can be accommodating to everybody, but they're also not rigid. They're flexible. And I need to make sure that they're impactful. I'm not just creating a procedure just to create a procedure. How is what I'm doing helping the staff? How is it making sure that the work is sustainable?
How do you test that?
To be truthful, that is something that I'm working on. So I think that right now, with the bandwidth, the ability, the time that I have now, is making sure that I'm partnering with the team when I'm creating something. I'm not just kind of going in and going rogue and saying, oh, I think this is the best way because Brittany can work this way. I need to create something that takes in mind the whole team as a whole. Mm-hmm. I need to account for everybody's neurodivergence. How do people like to be communicated? I need to take in consideration bandwidth. How am I pushing this out? What's on our schedule? So I need to make sure that I'm looking at all aspects when I'm pushing things out. Mm. Easier said than done.
Easier
but it's
said
time.
Than done.
It takes some time because my background is in corporate staffing. So
making
this switch to nonprofit has been a learning curve for me because I was coming from such a toxic boys club kind of culture. And now I'm coming into a culture that is extremely psychologically safe. I'm given room to fail. And it's truly an equitable and inclusive environment.
I feel like your past work in the corporate world would also be beneficial to inclusive communities since those are also sometimes people that you're serving.
100%. So I can kind of see things from the other side. I know warnings. I know red flags to look out for. I know what a bad policy looks like. I know what an exclusionary policy looks like. So I know how things shouldn't be. So then when I'm crafting things that ideally should be, I know what to stay away from.
I'm talking with Ange Bennett and Brittany Wright of Inclusive Communities about the Nebraska Legislature, their organization's mission of fostering conversation across cultural barriers, and Bob the Drag Queen's upcoming appearance in Omaha on March 26th. Stay tuned for the rest of our conversation after this break. Welcome back to Riverside Chats. I'm Maria Corpus. You can subscribe and hear previous episodes of this show on Apple, Spotify, or whatever your favorite app is.
Today, I'm talking with Ange Bennett and Brittany Wright of Inclusive Communities about the Nebraska legislature's recent activity targeting queer and trans youth and the Conversations for Change series, which will bring RuPaul's Drag Race winner, Bob the Drag Queen, to Omaha on March 26th. Admission will be free. Here's the rest of our conversation. So, switching gears here a little bit, there's recently been some policy out of Nebraska, as well as many other states, that target queer and trans youth, as well as drag queens. So how is Inclusive Communities addressing that?
So we do a little bit of policy and advocacy work, not as much as we'd like to, which we're hoping to expand that in the next few years as part of our strategic plan. But we sit on several, are they considered coalitions?
They're considered coalitions.
Okay, yeah. We sit on a lot of legislative coalitions. So the LGBTQ coalition, we sit on the voting rights coalition, the housing, and we're in those meetings. And during the legislative sessions, we partner with those other organizations that are also doing a lot of policy work and finding out the bills that most align with what we do as an organization. And then we provide testimony for or against those bills. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to do a little bit of lobbying, but, you know, fingers crossed. And so that's been our main point, is that testimonial piece and partnering with organizations that are actively doing the work and elevating those voices and those needs.
Who are some of those organizations that you're working with?
So we do, so our queer table talks, we actually partner with Out Nebraska, and they are doing a lot of policy and advocacy work as it pertains to queer and trans legislation. And then we also have a partnership with Urban Abbey, and they can't say enough great things about Urban Abbey. And most recently, they actually did have some threats for their drag queen story hour, and they ended up having to cancel it. So, and they're doing some like really amazing work as far as it pertains to just being equitable and inclusive in a religious space and for everybody. So those are two of our biggest partners when it comes to doing the work around LGBTQ advocacy.
Is there anything that has come out so far in this legislative session that you kind of are worried about or excited about?
I want to say it's LB 575. And that is the anti-sports policy that will ban trans kiddos from participating in sports that align with the gender that they identify as. And that has been the biggest policy that has, for queer and trans folks exclusively, that has hit. But we also have the DEI bill, and I think that is LB 1330. And that bill will just affect everything if that one goes through.
What do you mean by it'll affect everything?
It's basically saying, you know, we're going to pull DEI from universities and schools and spaces that need it. And if we do that, they're in place for a reason. Like, why did we need all of this programming to begin with? Because of exclusionary tactics. So if we take them out of these spaces, those spaces go back to the default of being unsafe. They go back to being very toxic environments for people who are the most underrepresented. And in turn, that will affect our queer and trans communities because they are also part of that underrepresented, marginalized group of people.
What do you attribute this rise in anti-LGBTQ plus queer and trans legislation or DEI work in general?
I think it's just been a long time coming, right? We saw that when we had the shift in our presidency a few years ago. And with that shift in leadership, we saw a complete culture change across the nation where people were more brazen in their hateful rhetoric, and in general, just feeling like
they had the space to voice a lot of hate, basically. And with that, I think it's just been like a domino effect, like, oh, you know, we've had this leadership, we saw that this is what this country can be if we get rid of X, Y, and Z. And with that, we've seen a lot of history being changed and rewritten and cut out of like education completely. Critical race theory has been a big one that's been on everybody's radar, where why do we need it? What does it even mean? You know, if we don't talk about it, it doesn't exist. So let's not talk about it. And I think that's also what it is when in the DEI sector is, okay, if we don't talk about it, like, why are we talking about it? You're creating this problem. Like, you're saying that diversity is this thing and, you know, inclusion. Like, if we don't talk about it, then what's the problem? And I think that's what it has been.
I think people have also kind of lost the value of the individual in the sense of seeing them as who they are, all their identities, and taking, I guess, valuing other people's stories. We're all from different walks of life. And so I think that there's a lot of othering. There's a lot of, oh, it's different from me, so then it's bad. Whereas somebody with a different story than mine, there's so much value there, and there's so much experience and things that I can learn from that individual, and that is lost.
Empathizing with people's stories seems to be kind of a lost art in everyday society. How do you prep people to have these kinds of conversations around whatever topic with an open mind?
So when we're in our workshops, one of the first things we do is create community agreements to make sure that the space we're in is a brave space, create rules, a set of rules that everybody in the room agrees on to follow, to make sure that people feel comfortable sharing their stories, or if need be, calling in somebody in the room if they start to maybe share something that's hurtful.
And why is it a brave space rather than a safe space? Because brave space is now another phrase that I didn't know about.
Going back to the meeting people where they're at, if you put people in a room, like, there are going to be people that come in the room and they don't want to learn. And for them, that may not be a safe space because they feel like they're in a room against their will, having to learn things that they don't care about. And so when we shift that mindset to a brave space, it just means we welcome you into this space with your, whether your, you know, your opinions differ from what we're about to tell you, teach you, help you learn and grow from. And then that also gives them the feeling that, okay, I'm in a, even if I don't really want to be here, it's an environment that if I do feel that I can say something, it will be accepted or at least open to being received. And again, even if it's an opinion that somebody may have to call you in on, you at least had that space to be able to voice it.
Yeah, I think it's so important to have those community guidelines. Mm-hmm. I feel like even in your interpersonal relationships with friends or your family members, there can oftentimes be anxiety or stress around needing to have a conversation with somebody. And so I like that idea of having, hey, here's these guidelines that I want to have this conversation in, but, you know, I'm coming at it from a place of love and want us to be our best aligned selves. And, you know, this is what I'm noticing, and to how to call people in rather than calling people out, really, mm-hmm. with that empathy. And like you were saying, Brittany, the whole view of that person's story. You have a big event coming up on March 26th. Who are you having to Omaha for the Conversations for Change speaker series?
We are bringing in Bob the Drag Queen.
Okay, tell us who Bob the Drag Queen is.
Bob participated in RuPaul's Drag Race, and I believe they won season 8. They were also part of a HBO docuseries called We Are Here.
I will talk about We're Here because it's a very, like, oh man, if you have not seen this show, it's amazing. So what they do, We're Here is a show where they go into small towns and they do drag.
So they're bringing drag to small towns, and it in so many, like, advocacy, right? Like, I'm a huge proponent of arts, advocacy through arts. And it just is a chance for people in small towns to see drag, experience drag for sometimes the first time, and really see what goes into it, and hopefully change the perspective that these are men in dresses. They're like so like harsh, hateful narratives around what drag really is.
So out of all of the famous people in our country, why was Bob the Drag Queen chosen for this year's Conversations for Change speaker series?
We were just, so we had Calpin here for our inaugural conversation. On the heels of that was our legislation, the 2023 legislative session. And that was when several anti-trans, anti-drag bills were introduced in Nebraska. And so when we were thinking about who we could bring in next, we wanted to center what was happening in our own state. And so that was the big motivator for bringing in Bob. And since then, nationwide, there's been over 500 bills that have been introduced between last session and this session, with several hate crimes against queer and trans folks, most recently with the content warning, the death by suicide of Nex Benedict due to bullying in the restroom and actual assault and bullying in the restroom. And so it just felt like a prime time to have a conversation centered around that.
And from what I read, Bob is also a sort of comedian too, so brings a little bit of comedic relief, hopefully, to these conversations that might be hard, or, you know, experiences in these small towns that might be different. So I'm excited to see what that looks like at your Conversations for Change event. And this is your second one, is that correct?
Correct.
So where did this conversation series come from, and how is it different from your other series?
So Miriam Brooks approached Inclusive Communities wanting to create a program in honor of her parents, Jane H. and Rabbi Sidney H. Brooks. Her father was an avid reader, and so she wanted to create a programming honoring authors and honoring creating a space for conversations to enact change.
And so this is an opportunity for Inclusive Communities, because we are so heavy on like businesses and nonprofits, and we do a lot of that work and through that lens. So this was a chance for us to be able to do similar work through an arts and humanities lens.
Why is it important to do it through an arts and humanities lens?
Because arts is activism, and we see a lot of artists, writers, actors, comedians utilizing their platform to enact a lot of social change.
And from a person who is not artistic by any means, from something that I've observed, I see that individuals utilize art as also a form of like radical joy, because of all the things in the world that you experience, joy is an act of being radical. And so I enjoy seeing other people engaging in that joy and making the conscious decision to still be happy regardless of the world that we're in.
So what can attendees expect from this event? Is it going to be drag show, conversation, panel, community conversation?
So this is a lovely fireside chat. So awesome. Another tidbit about Rabbi Sidney is that he started a lot of interfaith dialogue in the community. And so what we're doing is we're expanding the conversations that he had in the community that a lot of people knew about, a lot of people attended. And we're pulling in not just the interfaith, we're doing the cross-cultural, we're doing the intergenerational conversations, cross-racial conversations. And so this is that opportunity for us. So nice little fireside chat. Our ED will be the moderator. Bob will be there answering a lot of questions around their arts, their advocacy work, how they bridge the two. And it'll be a chance for some audience Q&A. And it's about an hour long, so not too long, over the lunch hour. So we're really hoping that people can come out, and it is free.
What? That is amazing to have a famous person come to the Holland, and it is free to the public.
Yes.
Yes.
So where can our listeners find out more information about this, and if they're interested, purchase a ticket?
They can reserve their ticket via Ticket Omaha. So that's ticketomaha.com. Tickets, again, are free. Bring all your friends, bring all your family. We were very intentional in doing it at the lunch hour, so then people can come during their lunch hour, but then also give a chance for students to also come during the day and be able to participate.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Communications Manager Ange Bennett and Director of Operations Brittany Wright of Inclusive Communities about the Nebraska Legislature's targeting of queer and trans folks and the upcoming Conversations for Change event with Bob the Drag Queen on March 26th. Follow Riverside Chats on Facebook or Instagram, or call in with a brief voicemail to 402-881-0089 for a chance to be featured on an upcoming show.
I love that this Conversations for Change is helping to really foster learning through dialogue. I think it gives folks a chance to empathize, like we are talking about, with other folks that maybe don't have the same history or aren't on the same path of life as yourself or audience members. So what are you hoping comes out of having Bob the Drag Queen here?
My hope is that with all of the legislation, I think it's key, right? That's, for me, is the legislation piece, because a lot of the exclusionary legislation is targeting our queer and trans kids. And so my hope is that people can leave with empathy, and understanding that people are just people. Like, they eat the same, they love the same, they sleep the same, work the same, they do all the same things. And they just, you know, may love different, or like that from you or me or whatever. But they still are people. And that we can take that when we're voting and we're thinking about all of the legislation that's coming out that's going to harm our future generations, that we're just being more mindful of that, and we're trying to curate an environment and a society that is open and accepting to everyone.
From my end, I hope that people leave the event with a sense of curiosity. I think if you're curious, you're going to be more apt to learn. And when you're learning, you're going to stumble across something. Hopefully you stumble across a seed, something that's going to spark either change, further questions, more grace, more empathy, something.
You're doing a lot of heavy lifting in our community, mm-hmm. by creating these brave spaces for people to come together and have these conversations. But how has your work within Inclusive Communities affected you personally? And what have you learned about your point of view or yourself?
So I started with Inclusive Communities in November of 2022. Kind of like I mentioned before, I'm coming from a corporate space, a corporate staffing space. And it's been a year and a half of a lot of unlearning, a lot of self-discovery. I know more than I thought. I'm braver than I thought. And I can endure more than I thought. Inclusive Communities has really made me kind of sit back and just sit with Brittany. Who is Brittany? Mm. What does Brittany want? How does Brittany want to, who is authentic Brittany? Because being in a corporate space, the mask was on, the mask was tight. And so really rediscovering myself and knowing that my work matters and I could go out in the community, do different things, and not just be whatever my title is. I'm more than my title.
I've been around AC for a long time, it feels like now. I started as a table talk facilitator volunteer. Been around since then and moved into this position about almost 2 years ago now. I think that the work that gets done here has really taught me about like privileges and owning that we all have privilege in some way, even if we do hold very intersecting identities. That has been my biggest thing. It's like, okay, there, within all of this that I got, right, Black, queer, trans, I do, there is some privilege in there somewhere. Like, I have a well-paying job. Like, I'm able to have housing and I'm able to feed myself. And so understanding that, yes, and the yes and part of who we are as people.
So how can our listeners find out more about you or continue to support your mission at Inclusive Communities?
In addition to Conversations for Change, on March 26th, we have an Omaha Table Talk coming up on Wednesday, March 20th. It is also over the lunch hour, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's going to be on neurodivergence, navigating a neurotypical world. Again, it's also a free event. So we encourage people to come out to that. You can find more information about that on all of our social media channels, Inclusive Communities, and our website, www.inclusive-communities.org.
Thank you so much for being here with me today. It was lovely to get to meet you, Brittany, and chat again with you, Ange. And thank you for all the work you're doing. I'm very excited to attend this next Conversations for Change.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
My guests today were Ange Bennett and Brittany Wright, the Communications Manager and Director of Operations of Inclusive Communities, respectively. Riverside Chats was created by Tom Knobloch and is a production of 91.5 KIOS Omaha Public Radio. Michael Griffin is our executive producer. The show is produced and edited by Courtney Bierman. Our original music is written and performed by The Real Zebos. Our artwork is done by Ben Matukowicz. Remember, you can find the backlog of Riverside Chats episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. I'm Maria Corpus.